Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Yesterday, Pope Francis announced the creation of a central office with broad authority over the Vatican's economic and administrative affairs. The changes come after allegations of financial impropriety at the Vatican Bank. A new PBS Frontline documentary airing tonight on SDPB-TV examines corruption at the Vatican Bank as well as the scandals over clergy sex abuse and power struggles at the Vatican. Anthony Thomas is director, writer, and producer of Secrets of the Vatican, and he joins us on the line from Boston. And Mr. Thomas, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much.
Why did you want to investigate what was happening in the Catholic Church and the Vatican?
Well, this is a very complex issue. I was asked in the middle of 2012 if I was prepared to do a program on this, and I felt it was a very, very depressing situation, and I wasn't keen. But then I watched the takeover of the new Pope and all that new hope, and I felt now was the time to look at the problems that he was having to face and also to really describe what he was doing and the changes he was making in his first year of the papacy.
Now, the sexual abuse scandals in particular have been reported in the news a lot over the past decades or so. Is there an aspect to these stories that you're addressing in the documentary Secrets of the Vatican that have been missing from the reporting?
There are a number of extra things I hope to bring to this, and that is relating the scandals to the Vatican and how the Vatican has advised and handled these. But another thing that I felt was very important to do, because there is this problem when something is reported, and then it's reported and reported, and people get tired of it, of thinking that the problem has gone away. It hasn't gone away. During Pope Benedict's papacy, it became an international scandal, 27 countries. And I wanted to go into this in a little bit more depth, which I do in the film. And I also wanted, as I said, to link it to the Vatican and how the Vatican has been handling it, since my program is about the Vatican. I think the very important things to discuss, which I hope I've revealed in this film, we all know that pedophilia is something that exists in so many organizations. But it is so terrible for the victim when it is the priest that does it, because the priest is between you and God. And it is not just shaking you kind of physically and your whole psyche, but it is actually, for a small child, believing Catholic, it is a terrible, terrible thing to happen. And just two interviews in the film where I hope I've gone into the condition and the consequences of it in much greater depth.
Yeah, there are a couple of those personal stories of sexual abuse of children. They're very difficult to watch, but this is an important part of getting this story across to viewers. I mean, these are very specific accounts.
Yes, that's right. Two very different experiences. One is linked to the much wider story of the Legionaries of Christ and Maciel, which would take me about 10 minutes to describe to your listeners. The other is just one particular case of a woman who is now in her 50s who still has never received any compensation for what's happened.
Now, what is so heartbreaking about this, which is what you mentioned just a few minutes ago, is that this abuse was by priests, and they were the, you know, that intermediary between these youngsters and God. I'm wondering, in talking with these people today and the other interviewers, other people that you've interviewed for the documentary, what has that done to their faith?
Well, this is a wonderful thing, and this is why this whole experience, aspects of this whole experience, were so positive. All the people I've interviewed, including victims of abuse, including people who've been investigating aspects of the Vatican, they remain strong in their faith. And this is terribly, terribly important. In fact, of all the, I mean, scores and scores of people I've talked to during research as well as filming, I only found one who, because of what happened to her, no longer has the Christian faith at all. What I see everywhere is people who care desperately about their faith, and this is why they're so angry that these things have happened, who are real defenders of their faith.
What does that suggest about the nature of faith and religion and belief in God, that even after going through these horrible experiences, that that faith remains strong?
Well, if you look at the whole history of Christianity, I mean, my background is Anglican, not Catholic, but you look at the whole history of Christianity, there have been times when wars have been committed in the name of faith, when torture has been allowed in the name of faith. Somehow the truth of the faith itself gets through in spite of all the things that humans do along the way to distort it, to use it as an excuse for cruelty, for war, or whatever, ever. But the faith itself survives, and survives in its purest form.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Anthony Thomas. He's director, writer, and producer of the PBS Frontline special, Secrets of the Vatican, and that airs this evening on SDPB-TV. You suggest in the documentary that Pope Benedict made many attempts at reform, including reforming the Vatican Bank, along with the sexual scandals, but was overwhelmed. Why was that? Why was this too much for him to deal with?
Well, partly it's a question of age, but not entirely. I mean, he was a very good man, a very shy man, an intellectual, a man who was a catechist, who came from that academic background, and all the problems dealing with leadership, he didn't have those qualities that allowed him to override people who were behaving in ways that were wrong. He desperately wanted to reform the Vatican Bank. He never stopped apologizing for child abuse. It was something that shocked him and horrified him. But he didn't have the muscle that was required to, defeat this particular cabal of cardinals or whoever it was that were making life difficult in that particular area.
Does Pope Francis have the ability to succeed where
I think he's already proved that he has. Mm-hmm. I think his what he's achieved so far. I mean, you mentioned major reforms that were announced yesterday, but I mean, right from the off, he was taking strong steps with the Vatican Bank, for instance. I mean, he appointed a committee of five people within 3 weeks of him becoming pope. He's appointed eight cardinals to look into all aspects of the curia, the Vatican bureaucracy. He has an incredible strength and an incredibly independent mind. He's not somebody who can be pushed this way or that way. I'm very, very hopeful of what he's going to achieve.
Is he able to succeed because he doesn't because he's an outsider, because he didn't come up through?
I think you've raised a very important factor. I mean, he's the first one, as we say in the film, who's never educated in Rome or been any part of that. He is, because he comes from outside the Vatican. I think that's enormously important, and he is reaching out to cardinals of the third world or developing world or whatever we like to call it, to that wider church all the time, reaching out to the wider church, and I think that's terribly important.
Can he, as an outsider, change the power structures within the Vatican?
Well, that's the big question mark, and we leave it as a question mark at the end of the film. Two commentators feel that he won't be able to cope with it. Cardinal Maradiaga, who is the last voice in the film, says that he certainly will, and things will now change permanently.
Why is it that do you think that Pope Francis started out with such with all that goodwill, both in and out of the Catholic Church? Was it just the way his approach to being Pope from the very beginning?
from the very beginning. I mean, he's got a wonderfully outgoing personality. He just he links with everybody from the first night that he was up there on the, you know, on the balcony, and his papacy was announced. He just wished everyone good evening, which was such a normal thing to do. He didn't go into some sort of pontifical announcement or anything like that. He just has that charisma. Which people really trust. I mean, if you look at the film, there's one scene where he's washing the feet of prisoners, including Muslim women, and that look on his face when he's completed, turns up to look at one of them, it says words and words and words. He's a very devout, very good man, and he's a very strong man, and he's not frightened of expressing his opinions. There's none of this sort of guarded, careful utterances, so that you don't offend anybody. He says what he thinks, and people respect him for that. But right from the start, he also he refused to live in the Apostolic Palace, preferring to live in the sort of hostelry where visiting priests and dignitaries stay. He now drives some, I can't remember what it is, a little cheap Renault car. None of this nonsense with black chauffeur-driven Mercedes. He's just behaving in a way that is truly Christian, and people have immediately sensed this.
You worked on this documentary, this film, for about a year. Was it difficult?
Yes, I decided to go, that I wanted to go ahead with it in March, so it's nearly a year.
And it was, you found out, was it difficult finding the people that you needed to tell the story?
Found out what?
Was it difficult to get the people that you needed to tell the story, to get them on camera?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was. They have to trust that what you're going to do with their interview will be fair, and that takes time. And one had to speak to many, many people, even not all of them interviewed in the film, but to get as broad a compass as you could, and also to make sure that what you were hearing was not just coming from one source, but from several sources, that everything tied together.
Was it important in putting this documentary together that this wasn't just an indictment of the Catholic Church?
Very, very much so. And I think I said right at the beginning that this idea was first discussed with me in the middle of 2012, when there seemed to be no hope. This was at the high point of Vatican leaks and all the confidential papal documents were coming out. There'd just been a scandal about somebody who was organizing a sort of a virtual prostitution ring with choir boys, and all this stuff was coming out. And I thought, this isn't a subject I can cope with. It's just so negative. And it was watching carefully Pope Francis from the very, very beginning made me feel, well, absolutely, there is a film to be made here, because we now have a very hopeful future to move forward to.
Well, Mr. Thomas, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
That's Anthony Thomas. He's the director, writer, and producer of the PBS Frontline documentary Secrets of the Vatican. It airs tonight on SDPB-TV at 8 Central, 7 Mountain. And you'll also be able to watch it at several times tomorrow evening on SDPB-TV2. And that's it for this edition of Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Thanks to all of our guests on today's show. Stephen Zwemke is the producer. We had assistance from Chris Loffrey. Coming up tomorrow, we'll discuss the latest in state politics with the Dakota political junkies. Kevin Wooster of KELO-TV in Rapid City will join us, as well as Seth Tupper, editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic. That's tomorrow at noon Central, 11 Mountain, right here on SDPB Radio. Stay tuned. Here and Now is coming up next.